Lizzie, thank you very much for talking to us on North Derbyshire Radio today. You've got a story to tell about leukemia, and I was really interested and a bit shocked to hear about how you first discovered the symptoms. Can you talk me through that a bit?
So in July 2021, I got COVID and never really recovered from... I wasn't hugely ill, but felt very unwell. And from that point, just felt worse and worse and worse. I was extremely tired, restless all of the time. I couldn't even walk from my car into work without needing to stop and catch my breath. And I developed quite a few lumps down the side of my neck, all throughout my scalp. So when I was washing my hair, I could feel all of these pea-sized lumps everywhere. At the time, I was visiting a GP in Clown because I lived nearer to that one. And she said, I can't see anything sinister going on. It sounds like you have long COVID. And we've seen a lot of people come in with very similar symptoms. And at that time, I was also losing a lot of my hair in the shower, feeling very sick, just really, really unwell. And I remember saying to my manager at the time, I know there is something further going on with my body. I just knew it wasn't long COVID. And the GP said to me, oh, it could be a return of your asthma that you've had as a child. Again, we're seeing a lot of cases from people that have had COVID redeveloping asthma. She did quite a few blood tests because I was very persistent. I kept going back every week for 8 weeks, or was it 10 weeks? I kept going back saying, something's not right. I need to be seen by somebody else. I want a second opinion. These lumps, you know, they weren't hurting, they weren't disappearing. And she would say to me, you know, oh, have you tried using a different shampoo? You could be reacting to your shampoo, and try using Head and Shoulders. And I said, look, I already use Head and Shoulders as it is. We think it could be a scalp reaction or a scalp infection. And they did blood tests that came back. I never saw them, but I was told that they were completely normal. And then one day I'd finished work, had the worst headache, migraine. I used to suffer really bad with migraines, had the worst migraine I'd ever had. And my partner basically put me to bed, kept me in the dark. And I said, you know, something's not right. I'm going to ring 111 because I want some more advice. And I told them everything that I'd been going through for that 10-week period. At that time, I'd then got lumps in my armpits, and they dispatched an ambulance for me. And by the time they came, it wasn't classed as like an emergency, but they came, I think, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was throwing up everywhere. And then I was taken to A&E, had loads of blood tests done. I was hooked up to a drip, and literally within 3 or 4 hours, a doctor came to see me and he was like, you've got cancer.
Did it even cross your mind that that could be it?
It's funny because I've got text messages on my phone between me and my mum. And I said to her, what if it's cancer? And she was like, look, the doctor would pick it up on your blood results. I mean, usually for other people, it's like ding, ding, ding. You know, your blood results tend to show straight away that something's not right. So she was like, look, they would have picked something up on your blood. You've had like 3 or 4 lots of blood taken from the doctors. They've been sent off. They would have picked something up. And I said, you know, it could be cancer. What if it's cancer? And she was like, no, but obviously. So it did cross my mind a little bit, but I was very trusting in that it was just long COVID. And I had a couple of friends at the time that had got long COVID and that were in a very similar position. And, you know, they were fatigued. Like my partner was dressing me every morning to go to work. He was helping me in and out of the baths. I could hardly function, and I don't know how I did for 10 weeks. Looking back now, I was so poorly. But within 3 or 4 hours, an A&E doctor, they thought initially it was Hodgkin's lymphoma because of the lumps. And I'd had a CT scan and an MRI. It was a 12 centimeter by 12 centimeter mass sat right here. So that's why I couldn't breathe.
For the radio, where right here is?
In the middle of my chest.
Did you say 12 centimeter mass right there?
Yeah.
On your chest?
It was, but I was never in any pain as such. It was more just the feeling really well.
Sure. And then I've read some notes about what then happened, and there's something about lumbar punctures, and that doesn't sound very pleasant. What, tell me about what they did with you.
A lumbar puncture is basically a big long needle that goes into the bottom part of your spine. And for me, they did it for two reasons. So they would take spinal fluid out to test that the cancer hadn't spread to my brain. And they would also put chemotherapy in. So initially, the first couple I had were absolutely fine. You just lay on your side and you scrunch up really tight, like in the fetal position. You bring your knees right up to your chin as you can. And they put a little bit of anesthetic in. And they would just put the needle in, take the spinal fluid out and put the chemotherapy in. But after maybe three or four times, the scarring around my spine became very thick and very tough because they can only go in like one of two places. So it's very difficult for them. They only do it by just wiggling around and hoping that they get the right spot. So after, well, I think it was probably after a year or so of having them, I said to my consultant, it's becoming very difficult. I started to have gas and air every time because it was just so painful for me, even with the anesthetic, because they'd catch my nerves. And then eventually my consultant said, well, I now want you to go and have it done under x-ray, which was fine because obviously then they could see whereabouts the needle was going and the exact spot that they needed to go into. And then I had it under x-ray maybe three or four times. And after them, they decided to stop it completely. He said, it's not beneficial for you to be in that much pain. It's becoming quite difficult for the doctors to administer the chemotherapy. And he was happy at the time that my other chemotherapy was doing a good enough job to take that away. So yeah, lumbar punctures are not nice.
No. Do you get any sense that you wouldn't have needed treatment for as long if the leukemia had been caught earlier? Or if it had been caught earlier, you'd still have had all this, but at least you wouldn't have had those 10 weeks without a diagnosis and being told that you needed to change your shampoo. What do you think?
Yeah, there are a couple of factors with how long my diagnosis took. So if it had been caught earlier, my consultant said to me that I could have attempted to freeze my eggs. That opportunity was taken away from me. So since then, we've not really had a conversation about fertility because I am still under treatment at the moment. And so I suppose when I get to the end, I'll probably go and see a fertility doctor and see what my options are for some first in the future. So that was taken away from me because when I first met my consultant, he said to me, we need to get going now. We needed to be going weeks and weeks ago. It's gone too far. We need to start going. So I'm sorry, we can't give you that option. And I never really asked the question whether it would have sped things up or if my treatment would have been a lot less. I'm in like a little WhatsApp group with quite a few people that have a similar sort of cancer and other cancers. And they seem to have had treatment for a lot less time than me. But I don't know whether that's because their body responded much better. I mean, in the group, I'm the oldest one. But a lot of these people that I speak to are in the teens and early 20s. I was 27 when I was diagnosed, so quite late on for the cancer that I had. So the consultant had said to me, the younger you are, the better it is in terms of treating it quick, getting rid of it, and hopefully it never coming back. So my treatment went on for 2.5 years. And then some people that I spoke to only had it for 3 months. Some a year, some 9 months. So I think it just depended on how your body reacted. My first block of treatment, after that time, they did a bone marrow biopsy. So they took some bone marrow from a hip and they test it to see if they can see any leukemia cells, and they could. So it's technically then that my treatment hadn't responded 100% to the treatment. So then they did a further few blocks of chemotherapy, which then luckily I did respond to. And then they did a repeat bone marrow. And they're very, very strict when they do a biopsy. If they can see anything at all, even if it's like 0.0001% of bad cells, they still class you as, we need to still give you treatment. but they have to see literally nothing at all for the consultant to be like, we'll move you on to your next start of maintenance, which is a lot less intense.
And is that the stage that you're at now? What are things like right at this minute?
So I finished my maintenance treatment on the 30th of June this year. So I'm now classed as in remission, which is really nice after 2.5 years of really, really intense treatment. I do still see my consultant every three months. And that is just for a routine appointment. I'll have my bloods taken and I'll go and speak to him about how I'm feeling. Is there anything going on that I want to speak to him about? But luckily for me, I have a really good support network at the hospital, whereas if I have any concerns at all, I can ring 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and someone will speak to me, or I can go in, have a blood test done, see a doctor, and that'd be a doctor that's on the cancer ward, and they will speak to me. But so far, touch wood, so good, I haven't had to ring or speak to anybody, so that's been good.
It's reassuring to know they're there, isn't it? Yeah, I was reading that a lot of people, I certainly didn't know what the signs of leukemia are. I'm reading unusual bruising. Did you have that?
No, I did have it during my treatment. At the beginning, that wasn't one of my symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess it does vary for people, but these are some of the common ones, I suppose. And fatigue, which sounds like definitely... Yeah, unusual bleeding and repeated infections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel, if you had the time again, now that you know what ultimately was wrong with you, would you have felt even more confident and forceful, not forceful, but, you know, confident to say to the GP, look, this is not something that's going to be solved with a change of shampoo. Can we check if this is leukemia or some other kind of cancer?
100%. And I feel a lot at the minute like you get such a small period of time to go and speak to your GP. I mean, I went for something completely unrelated last week and he said to me, you know, I could go on a bit longer and talk to you a bit longer, but your 10-minute time slot, it's all. And I thought, I appreciate that you're really busy and overwhelmed with so many people needing to be seen. But I just thought if it had been something more concerning, it was kind of a rushed appointment. So my aim is to make sure that people really do know the signs and symptoms. So if they do go to their GP and their GP is umming and ahhing, to push for that second opinion, to push to see somebody else. And I wish I had definitely done that. Even though I did ask for a second opinion, by the time I was getting booked in for that second opinion, I'd already gone to A&E and been diagnosed. But I think for me, one of the trickiest things for my GP was that my bloods were all okay. But again, I never got to see them. So I don't know if I'd given them to my consultant, would he say something different with his knowledge? And I don't ever know if they did a full count or whether they just did, you know, iron or something else, you know, because I was so tired. So yeah, that's really why I want to drill it into so many people to not feel like they can't ask for that extra information and ask to be seen by somebody else if they don't feel like they're getting the answers that they want. Because I just knew I was really unwell and I didn't have asthma. I didn't need an inhaler. I didn't need to change my shampoo and I needed to see somebody else. And you know, I'm so glad that I trusted myself and ran 111 and said, but you know, even the age that I spoke to 111, the fact that they dispatched an ambulance said to me that something wasn't right, you know, and I gave them everything that I'd experienced over those 10 weeks and even they knew something was wrong. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And seeing the statistic that I think, is it a third of people who diagnosed with leukemia find out in A&E? So there's clearly a bigger problem here that we need to tackle of diagnosing it much earlier before it gets to the stage that you were at.
Yeah. And, you know, the fact that you trust these people to say, well, this is what I can give you if you don't feel very well. And you go to those people to help you feel better or help you understand what's going on. And I was just so, so let down. Luckily for me, I just didn't take no for an answer. And the fact that my treatment has worked, if it hadn't worked, I think it obviously would be a completely different story. She rang me to apologise, the doctor that I'd spoke to, because I had the same doctor time and time again. And she rang me to apologise, and I just thought, well, it's not your life that you've ruined, it's mine, by not diagnosing me earlier and not getting me seen by somebody else earlier. I think my dad actually asked my consultant whether, if he'd been told what I'd had told the doctor, what his opinion would have been, and he said I would have told her to come in straight away to see me. And that's what I did say to her. I said, well, now you know that if someone next time approaches you with exactly what I've told you, don't just brush it off as long COVID. And I think that also went against me, that at the time COVID was a huge thing. They were obviously seeing a lot of people very unwell on the back of COVID. So it was very much in their minds at the time that, oh, looks like you've got long COVID. Yeah, we've seen a few people with similar things. But it wasn't. It just, yeah, it was much, much worse than that.
Well, I want to end on an upbeat note. I mean, you said there, it's not your life that's been ruined. I mean, do you feel that way? Do you feel hopeful for the future now? How are things looking for you?
It's tricky because I often feel very sad that I lost such a big amount of time. A lot of people talk about the end of your treatment and when you come out the other side, and you think, people expect you to think that, you know, you've got your life back, you should be so happy, why are you not happy? And it's not that, it's that my life stopped on the 15th of October 2021, and now it's started again on the 30th of June 2024. But my family, my friends, my job, that all moved and has not stopped with me. So everything's carried on in that time. So now you're expected to pick up where you left off. And it is really difficult. And also coupled with having health anxiety and, you know, wanting to go out to places and see people, but still being quite nervous about catching a cold and being bedridden for weeks. And it is really, really difficult to come to terms with the fact that everybody's moved on in your life, but now you're back to where you were 2.5 years ago, and you've got catching up to do, relationships to rebuild, and where could I have been in my job if that hadn't happened to me, and where could I have been, what places could I have seen? And it's really sad and it's really hard. I think people just expect you to be absolutely over the moon that this is all coming to an end, which I am completely. You know, I'm getting my life back, I'm going back to work, but I've had such a huge chunk of time taken away from me, and it's really difficult to come to terms with.
And Lizzie, just finally, I guess there are organisations that can help people who are suddenly discovering that this is something that they've got. I don't know whether that's happened with you.
Yeah, so I was supported hugely, especially financially, by Leukemia and Care. They have huge amounts of advice and information that you can read on the website. They also offer financial support to anyone, you know, that like ourselves, that wasn't working at the time, even if it's just to get a bit of food shopping or to pay your bills. And if anyone needs any other information or wants to have a look further at the signs, the symptoms, maybe worried themselves that something may be going on, or for a family member, a friend, then go and visit it, leukemiauk.org.uk. They're amazing and have been brilliant with helping me